This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Tan Chung Han, and Joyce Go with the top business stories of the day. Let's turn our attentions to some of the stories that are there in our business headlines. Malaysia airports are set to expand. Question is anybody or is everybody ready for KLIA3? According to Malaysia Airports Holding Berhad, a new airport terminal is being considered. A decision could be made by 2023. That's not too far away. It's about 5 years away, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So look, MEHB and the government are reportedly in talks already about KLIA3. Got to get used just saying that, KLIA3. All right. So obviously, in anticipation of more passengers, because last year, 59 million passengers went through KLIA and KLIA2 combined. So that's three quarters of the total capacity for both airports. Total capacity is about 75 million passengers.
Yeah, Han, and the momentum has continued into 2018. In January, MEHB set a record for the month, over 8 million passengers in January 2018. Then in February, over 7% on-year growth. That meant over 10 million passengers passed through MEHB's 39 airports last month. And that is expected. That expected growth in air travel isn't just for Malaysia, it's a global trend. By 2036, airline traffic could almost double to 7.8 billion from last year's 4 billion. That's a huge jump.
Mm. Now, it's not just a new terminal that's in the offing. MEHB also plans a fourth runway. However, Dato' Sri Badlisham Ghazali, Managing Director of MEHB, says there are other priorities before the fourth runway is built.
We've already allocated 60% of KLIA land is earmarked for airport use sahaja. So that master plan already have runway 4. But I think we will be at least decades before we need another runway 4. So we need to make sure we maximise that investments and capacity first before we talk about runway 4. Tapi kalau nak cakap runway 4 pun memang ada plan.
That was Dato' Sri Badlisham Ghazali, Managing Director of Malaysia Airports.
Yeah, so again, fourth runway, decades away. In the meantime, for example, you got the Civil Aviation of Malaysia, or DCA or CAM. They are upgrading the air traffic control systems all of this year and into 2019 as well. So plenty of work to be done before we can consider that a fourth runway.
Yeah, according to Sydney-based CAPA, Centre for Aviation, about $1 trillion set to be spent upgrading or building new airports around the world. So basically, it's a global trend, right? About half of that money, so about $500 billion will be spent upgrading or building new airports in Asia.
Yeah, so $1 trillion for the world, $500 billion for Asian airports. Here are some highlights, okay? Beijing, almost $13 billion airport set to open next year. Bangkok, $3.5 billion worth of upgrades through 2021, including a third runway. South Korea, they are spending $4.5 billion on a second terminal. And Joyce, even there in Singapore, they just opened that new terminal, right?
Yeah, right. Singapore's Changi Airport last year unveiled a fourth terminal worth $950 million. Hong Kong, meanwhile, plans to fill in part of South China Sea to make room for a third runway at a cost of $18 billion. Even AirAsia is talking about building a low-cost terminal in Sarawak. Could cost about 200 to 300 million ringgit depending on land cost. So it looks like everybody's expanding when it comes to airports.
Okay, so we have possibilities. We have KLIA3, a possible fourth runway, and apparently, to add to the mix, a theme park. Now, I don't get this, but I don't see how theme parks fit into aviation.
Why not? Okay, so look, this talk of a theme park at KLIA's Aeropolis city. Oh, I'm still quite kind of confused. Is it Aeropolis or Aeropolis? Try to make it
Aeropolis.
More.
Aeropolis.
Yeah. All right, fine. Anyways.
Acropolis in Athens.
Sure, yeah, I'll take your word for it then. All right, this talk has been going on since 2014, okay? And it's not just theme parks. There are concert halls and even golf courses as well. And the idea is to make this Aeropolis city a destination in itself as just opposed to a transit hub or something.
Also to diversify income. You want to make sure it's just you have more income streams coming on board. And keep in mind, MEHB has 22,000 acres of land, of which more than 500 acres have been earmarked for the theme park alone.
Okay, could you explain to me how an airport could be a destination in itself?
They're trying to do that.
Yeah. Is there any example? Are there any airports in the world which have become destinations?
Well, MEHB has spoken about, say, some of the Middle East, although you don't want a theme park in the Middle East, right?
I don't know why not. A lot of rich people. There are a lot of rich people.
Okay,
you're going to have indoors.
Indoor, aircon. They even have an ice thing, not a skiing thing in the Middle East. They can do all sorts, you know.
Yeah, also the idea for MHB is to grow its non-aviation related revenue, hence theme parks, golf courses, etc.
Actually, Sharad, coming back to your question, my kids love Changi because they have that indoor playground thing. So we go earlier so that they can play in the playground. There are lots of things to do in Changi, actually. So
oh my God, you are the future,
airport.
Joyce. Joyce, go there. The future. Okay, moving on, let's have a look at our railway system. We are looking at KTM, or Kereta Api Tanah Melayu Berhad. It says it needs to, some commentators are saying it needs to seriously rethink its business model if it's going to survive, as going concerns, there are many going concerns moving forward. And this is according to Penang Institute.
That's right. So what they're saying is that the government needs to rethink the entire basis of separating the rail asset ownership by Railway Assets Corp and the rail operations by KTMB. That's what they're going to do right now, right? So Penang Institute head Dr. Ong Kian Ming said that the possibility of recombining the asset ownership and operations would allow KTM to monetize some of the physical assets to cover its debt and operational losses. So basically, he's suggesting that they relook at the business model.
Now, didn't KTM mention sometime before they're looking at ways to monetize their assets? I mean, isn't this a conversation that's been going on for some time now?
Yeah, I mean, this is a common theme when you think about rail projects, right? Same thing with ECRL, same thing with the MRT lines as well. Yeah, KTM needs to seriously look at that. Certainly, you know, you often hear this phrase, unlocking the value of the property and the land along these lines. I mean, you know, keep in mind, these guys are over 150 years old, right? Mm-hmm. KTM, I'm talking about, not Sharad, okay? The potential is there. Okay, the land bank around it could generate projects worth some 6 billion ringgit.
That's right. And its chief executive officer Muhammad Rani Hisham Samsudin said this is part of the state-owned rail operators' initiatives to increase income from its non-fare segment. So they're looking at various pockets of opportunities for pieces of land neighbouring their stations to unlock the value. But basically, how they're going to do it? The venture into property development will be one concept of a transit-oriented development and partnering with strategic developers.
Yeah, so you're seeing this trend, right? You know, like be it Air Asia, be it Malaysia Airports, be it KTM, they're trying to move away from their core. You know, Air Asia is trying to monetize its digital assets, you know, airports,
FinTech.
Theme parks and whatnot. And here you got KTM, right? So it's moving away just from their core of railways. Now unlock those values on the land banks around there.
Now, KTM did say in November that they would go into property development as early as this year. But we've yet to hear anything. What is clear, though, is that they should do something to turn around their financials. They're bleeding badly, aren't they, Joyce?
Yeah, KTM saw accumulated losses from 2000 to 2015, totaling nearly 1.9 billion ringgit, guys. And it returned to the black in FY2016, making a profit of 63 million from a loss of 200 over million ringgit in FY2015. But they made money in FY2016 because they had a one-off asset disposal. If you were to carve that out, KTM would have made a loss of 189 million ringgit. Mm. So basically, they're still operationally still loss-making in a way.
Okay, but so why are the financials so bad? I mean, it does seem to be still an important mode of transportation, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, because there are social costs, or rather social benefits to be had by having that railway system here in Malaysia as well, I mean, despite ridership possibly kind of waning. So the Penang Institute points to KTM's inability to control costs. So that's why they're bleeding so badly. You know, despite revenue increasing by 44% from 2010 to 2016. You know, the cost of services has actually exceeded revenue every year from 2010 to 2015. Mm. You know, so I mean, even with the ETS and all, like, well, will that be enough to help them, you know, become more efficient?
Well, because of the ETS, in 2016, revenue exceeded costs, and that is because of the ETS.
Ah,
yeah.
Right. And we all had a very recent, well, not we all, but we all, as in like the morning run and the folks at BFM, we had a very recent experience with KTM. We took it for our
annual business.
That's right.
Yeah. And
holiday,
you know, safe to say, it was not a very smooth journey.
It was a smooth journey. It's just it didn't start on time.
Okay, well,
that was the thing. But otherwise, the ride is very good.
Tickets, yeah. And they didn't have seats for our tickets.
No,
but it was a smooth, comfortable journey.
No, but we were on the lucky train. The folks that went on the train before us, yeah, they didn't have a smooth journey.
Okay. Let's move from transport to look at business. News of ride-hailing player Grab expanding into lending and insurance.
Yeah, so Grab is expanding into financial services in partnership with a Japanese credit card company, hoping to offer credit to millions of people without bank accounts. So what Grab is saying is that they will use their huge cache of customer data from the app to provide ways to measure creditworthiness of the people outside the formal banking system.
Yeah, so keep in mind, these folks, they are being targeted are those outside the formal banking system. So the question here is, how are they going to ascertain, you know, the creditworthiness of these people, right? How do you do your KYC and whatnot?
Yeah.
So we've got this comment from the head of GrabPay, Jason Thompson, who says that they plan to assess them using a mixture of signals that could include their driving style. So think about that. Your driving style could ascertain, you know, your creditworthiness for this loan from Grab. Go
so
figure,
what, if
right?
you speed, then what? You're risky? And if you're a slow driver, I will let
you. Well, I mean, slow drivers can be dangerous too.
Yeah. Or if you speed, then you can pay back your loans faster.
Is this about Malaysia?
Interesting.
Is this about Malaysia? Because I'm surprised. I mean, how many Malaysians are outside the formal banking system? Or are we talking about countries like Indonesia and others?
Yeah.
I mean, where, in fact, you might have many more people outside.
Well, good question, Sharad. So this JV will begin by focusing on providing loans to Grab drivers and merchants for purchasing smartphones or working capital, basically. But a question here is, after providing to Grab drivers and merchants, will the company expand the service to everyone else? Right? That's your question, right? So if so, wouldn't that eat into the power of formal banks? But then again, do banks want these customers?
And does Grab care that they're eating into somebody else's pie?
Well, the World Bank estimates that more than 260 million people in Southeast Asia lack bank accounts. So that restricts their access to... They can't get credit because of that.
Right.
So it's a huge market, but whether or not you want to loan them money, that's another thing.
And also, you know, I recall during my grill with Maybank Islamic, which you can always download via the BFM app, you know, by painting this difference between, you know, the Malaysian market versus, you know, our peers across the region. So relatively speaking, Malaysia has a more saturated banking market versus, you know, the likes of Indonesia and the other countries you mentioned, Sharad.
Aside from offering credit, Grab will also offer insurance products aimed initially at Grab drivers and customers through a partnership with Chubb. So it looks like they're diversifying and going stronger and deeper into the fintech space.
Fascinating. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the Breakfast Grill. Joyce, you'll be speaking to Johan Isha, CEO of Media Prima Television Networks. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.